At The Home Depot, we're dedicated to helping you build the skills that get your home projects done right. That's why we offer free and interactive online DIY workshops. During the live streams, our knowledgeable associates help you tackle your DIY projects no matter your age or skill level. You can learn how to install new single pole switches, as well as standard duplex and GFCI outlets. Register for free at homedepot.com/workshops. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
All right, welcome back once again. We are back in the swing of things around here. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, your co-host right there, Chris Sinzak. How's it going, brother?
Good, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Now we're a couple of weeks out from Rockin' Pod. Mm-hmm. Time to start taking the show seriously again.
Yeah, well, and I've told people, if it wasn't for Aaron Camaro, the last 2 or 3 months, there wouldn't have been a Decibel Geek podcast, because he's definitely shouldered the load, so yeah, I owe you some editing time.
That explains the decline.
No, not at all. But yeah, I owe you big for all that. So
hey, man, it's easy. I love doing it. You know, just like I know you do, and just because Rockin' Pod takes up so much of your time, I'm more than happy to step up and just keep this show going, because this is, to me, Decibel Geek is still number one.
No, yeah,
always.
Definitely.
You know, always my favorite thing. So today we're doing something special. We haven't done this in a while, mm-hmm. and we've got a special guest that has prodded us to do this. It's going to be interesting. This is going to be a learning experience today as we sit down with D-Hud and we talk about the heavier side of the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
So if you're a huge Black Crowes fan, hang out. You're going to love it. If you're not a huge Black Crowes fan, hang out. You're going to learn something, and you may learn to love the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
But before we get into all that, we got to take care of our business. Talk about recommendations and reviews. Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Facebook recommendations. We love it all. And when we get them, we always read them on the show because we want to show how much we appreciate it. So here's one for you. It's 5 stars, and it's entitled, These Guys Rock. Goes a little something like this. Thank you, Chris and Aaron, for all your hard work to put together and continually improve the most awesome podcast in the history of Earth.
Wow.
That's strong. I like that. I found Decibel Geek Podcast a little over a year ago when doing an iTunes search for the band Hair of the Dog. I found your podcast and was immediately hooked. Not only do you guys talk about a lot of the bands that I grew up on and love, but you also turned me on to a whole list of bands that I was unaware of, like Massive Wagons, Scorpion Child, The Treatment, In This Moment, and Yellow Cake, just to name a few.
All good bands.
Heck yeah. I've recently gone back to episode 0, and I'm working my way up 5 or so podcasts a week to hear all the awesome interviews and get turned on to cool music. I even have my 13-year-old son hooked on Decibel Geek. Now as we educate a whole new generation on music awesomeness, thank you for all you do.
Wow.
That is badass right there.
That comes from Shy Hitman on Apple Podcast. Starting on episode 0, I promise if you hang in there, it'll get a lot better.
And then a little worse, and then a little better, and then a little worse, and a little better.
Yeah, you can skip Bracket Buster.
Yeah.
Don't even fool with that episode. That's our black sheep of the episode discography.
That's always, yeah, that's eesh. Funny.
Yeah, well, failed experiment.
Nice. Well, here's another one. This is a Facebook recommendation. Comes to us from our good friend Warren Edward LaRue Baker, the man with 4 names.
Yeah.
Goes a little something like this. I had been an occasional listener until the Thin Lizzy episode. Since then, I've been hooked. Chris and Aaron are knowledgeable, entertaining, and best of all, enthusiastic. Their passion for the music is contagious. Do yourself a favor and give this show a listen. You won't regret it.
Thanks so much.
I like that. Those are 2 badass reviews and recommendations we got this week.
Yep.
And yeah, you got to love that.
Yeah, I no complaints there. And good to hear from you, Warren. Thanks for leaving the review. And
that's another one. I feel like today, like we've done in the past where we've done these, where we've brought on guests and talk about bands, you know, and different things, just like we did the Japanese metal, just like we did that Thin Lizzy episode that Warren was talking about right there. I got a feeling today is going to be one of those days, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So our other favorite people, the Geeks of the Week, these are the people that shared on Facebook and retweeted on Twitter last week's episode. The Rockin' Pod recap.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to enjoy that.
I know we sure did.
Yeah. Geeks of the Week this week are Deirdre Pierce Harper, Kevin Williams, Jason Thomas Broderick, Matt Ashcraft, Metal Nerdery Podcast. Shout out to that podcast because they're pretty much a brand new podcast and they came to the expo and did a really nice review of it after it was over with. So I appreciate those guys. Otto Erling Gregerson, Growing Up Rock Podcast, James West, David Gregory Karsh, Joseph Capone, Greg Troyan, Greg McGlone, Kristen Schimbeck, Adam Cox, HP Marketing Company, Andy Connors, Shane Hebert, Ray Kuhn, Shay Hargett, David Glenn, Rob Harris, Warren Edward LaRue Baker. I said your name twice this week. Mikhail Burrell, Bill Elam, The Bakery Podcast, Aaron Baker, Baco, Rodney Dixon, Jay Shabluski, Todd Cunningham, Tom Jackson, Christopher Stokes, Robin the Hood, Coxie, Eladio, Sean Cullen, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Also a little side note to Warren Edward LaRue Baker. Have your wife leave us a review. We'll read her name too.
We will. Have the whole family leave a review, even your grandma.
Yes, everyone. Everyone you can, get them involved. You know, this is a cool thing we do. We've had fun with this for years. Mm-hmm. We've made so many awesome friends, as we can attest to, because we've got to hang out with so many of them just a couple of weeks ago at Rockin' Pod. And, you know, the family just continues to grow, the rock family. We're doing everything we can do to bring rock and roll back to prominence, you know, and make people realize it's just as important today, if not more important, than it's ever been before. And we can't do that without your help.
That's right.
So get in on it.
So our guest today, excited to have him back on the show, David Hudson. You already knew him as the host of Digital Kill the Radio Star from his previous appearance, but you know, apropos to today, he's also the host of a Black Crowes podcast called State of Amorica. So, David, or as we call you, D-Hud, welcome back to the show. Oh, happy to have you here, and this is this was your idea to do a Black Crowes themed episode, and we do these heavier side of episodes, so we got to kind of dig through the discography a little bit and you know, basically just play some of the tunes we like from the band. But how did you get? Let's start at the beginning. How did you get into the Black Crowes to start with?
I never have been a big fan of the song "Hard to Handle," but the other songs on that album I really really like, and they were so different at the time because they weren't Poison, they weren't Warrant, they weren't, they weren't Metallica. And, you know, you're starting to have the emergence of the Seattle scene. They didn't fit that. They were just a throwback to 70s rock music. And I just really dug it and got into them. And then Southern Harmony came out and I got all of their albums as they came out. And I would call myself a casual fan. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was around 1998 or 99, I think, when they did the tour with Jimmy Page. It was just one of those things, something clicked, and their music just really started resonating with me on a personal level. And I was going through kind of some tough times then, and their music honestly really helped me get into them. And by the time the Lions album came out, that was basically all I listened to was the Crowes there for a while. That feeling for them has never left me. And I'm pretty much obsessed with them. It's, you know, it's kind of like, a lot of you guys talked with people about Kiss. I'm like that online with the Crowes. And it's a cool community to be a part of. You know, their fans are very loyal. And I found a friend in New York, Ian Rice, who is just as passionate about it as me. And we came up with the idea for this podcast, and it has just, it succeeded. I had a number, if we averaged this certain number per week in a year, I would say it's a success. And we started averaging that on week three.
Wow. Nice.
So yeah, they just, their music just means a lot to me. I support all of the side projects, Chris Robinson Brotherhood, Mark Ford, the Magpie Salute, Rich Robinson. And once I got into them and started really going back and listening to the albums with a different set of ears, they remain to me my favorite band of all time. I think they're one of the all-time great American rock and roll bands. They just mean the world to me.
That's awesome. That tells me we're talking to the right guy about this today.
Mm-hmm. How did you discover them?
It's a little different for me because I think the Black Crowes came up at a time when I was feeling like my favorite bands are being replaced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking at MTV and I'm not seeing the bands that I love anymore. I'm seeing, you know, I'm seeing Stone Temple Pilots and I'm seeing Nirvana and Pearl Jam and I'm seeing the Black Crowes. And, you know, at first the Black Crowes always felt to me like, this is one of these bands that's being forced on me now while my favorite bands are being forgotten about. And that made me a little standoffish with the Black Crowes. And, you know, their first hit singles came out and they were so overplayed on the radio.
Right.
That made me want to like them even less. But truly, I would look at them and say, visually and musically, they still remind me of something that could have come out in the era of my favorite bands that are now currently being replaced,
mm-hmm.
and fit right in there with a lot of them. You know, they, as the like the Izzy Stradlin fan in me,
oh, yeah.
You know, the kid that really liked the Juju Hounds album would listen to the Black Crowes and go, you know, this is, I like, what I like about this is the same thing I like about that.
Right.
You know, and so it took me a minute to mm-hmm. accept the Black Crowes into my heart.
Yeah.
But once I did, I was all in. I like the Black Crowes a lot. I mean, some of their stuff isn't, I guess Black Crowes for me is one of those bands that are probably a little 50-50.
Right.
You know, 50% of their music, I love it a lot. The other 50%, not so much into it.
Right.
But doing this, what we're doing today, really kind of opened my eyes again because I really wanted to check out all their stuff and go through with an open mind and listen to it. And you know what? I've got most of the Black Crowes CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those CDs, I know there's at least a handful of songs on each one that I really like a lot.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to showcase some of them here today.
Yeah. And for me, I was actually pre-aware of them before MTV because they actually came up where I lived in Georgia. I lived in Cobb County in a town called Kennesaw, and the Robinson brothers are from that area.
Yeah. Marietta.
Yeah, Marietta, which is right down the street from Kennesaw. I remember seeing flyers and stuff for them in the late 80s in like advertising for stuff. I didn't get to see them live, but I wouldn't say they were making waves, but I just remember the name, the Black Crowes. But then I guess my first real exposure was the Jealous Again video when that came on MTV. And I remember it was like kind of like Aaron. I was just like, wow, this is definitely different than what yeah. than what they've been playing. And I got a Stonesy vibe from especially that song. I was like, and Chris Robinson's look, very Mick Jaggerish, you know, back in those days. And I liked them right away. But also, like you said, the radio and MTV just really drilled them into your head. There's certain songs, Hard to Handle, I agree with you, David. I that song just never clicked with me either. And it's a cover song. It's a song from the 60s.
Right. Remedy kind of gets me that way, too. That one got played pretty hard.
So much. And She Talks to Angels is a fantastic song, but it just got driven into the ground through radio. So, like, it's funny for a band that's so countercultural, though, that they had a huge marketing push behind them in the early days because they were everywhere. And
all right, so you know that Rick Rubin was behind all of that.
Yeah, well, I love the story about Aaron. Do you know the story about what he wanted to name the band?
No, I don't know nothing about the Black Crowes.
I remember this from their Behind the Music. David's going to do a better job telling this story, but I know you know what the story was.
Yeah, so they signed to Rubin's label, and I've listened to Steve Gorman, the drummer, on several interviews talk about this. Rubin was kind of hands-off with them, and they were recording music, and he flew into Atlanta, and they do not speak very highly of him still. I think there were some, you know, personality clashes there, but he looked them in the eye. Now, Marietta is a little northwest of Atlanta mm-hmm. in Cobb County.
Right.
He wanted to call them the Cobb County Crowes, all K's.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That was his brilliant idea.
They were just pretty much like F you, you know? And they just really never, I don't think, ever got off to a good start with them. But
I suppose it's like, what are you thinking? Why would we name ourselves that? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. And as far as like the style of the music, all of the interviews that I've read from them, which is a lot, they weren't really into this kind of music. It doesn't seem like the band before it was called the Black Crowes was called Mr. Crow's Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you listen to like Steve Gorman, he's like, I wasn't listening to the Stones. I was listening to the Beatles and R.E.M. and Big Star and stuff like that. And I know Chris and Rich had talked about they were big into the Stooges and things like that. And so I never have really gone and listened to any of that Mr. Crow's Garden. There's, you know, bootlegs floating around out there. But from what I understand, it didn't really sound like what the Black Crowes became. And they did a showcase in New York, and in their set, they played No More, No More by Aerosmith, and then turned and played a Stooges song. And I think it was George Draculius, maybe, who wound up producing that first album, was like, who does that? And he's like, that's what we do. Wow. And but you're right. When they recorded this album, all the press said it sounded like the Faces, and that has stuck with them forever. Which I think it's always to say it's lazy journalism, because post the first album, they don't sound like the Faces. But they somehow came up with this sound that was very reminiscent of what I like to call that 72 to 75 Rolling Stone sound. Just a lot of swagger and encompassing all different types of American music. And so it's a miracle that the album performed the way it did, given the times they were in. Like we said, it was 1990. You know, Poison had Flesh and Blood out, Warrant, Cherry Pie. Metallica was coming off Injustice for All. And radio, I don't think, knew what to do with them at times, but they wound up on the pop stations and the rock stations. And like you said, just saturated the market with those singles off the first album.
Yeah,
and that is weird for a band that doesn't fit here. It doesn't. I mean, they're not grunge. You mm-hmm. know, they're not one of these Seattle bands, and they're definitely not, you know, a Sunset Strip type band.
Well, and I kind of think that maybe the emergence of Guns N' Roses made it more palatable for a band like this to come out, because, you know, GNR, yeah, they came from the Sunset Strip, but they weren't your general cookie-cutter hair metal band.
Right.
They had that old-school kind of rootsy sound, but turned up to 11, of course. And also, I remember didn't the Stones do the Steel Wheels tour around this time? Because like the
89.
Yeah, so the Stones kind of came back, and that I think that sound got in vogue a little bit again, so it kind of opened the door for the Black Crowes to kind of, you know, say, here we are, basically.
Well, here is some interesting Guns N' Roses Black Crowes trivia that you may not know. So the first album, Shake Your Moneymaker, was recorded with Jeff Cease on guitar playing lead. And he was kicked off at the end of the tour. And I think he actually, though, plays for like one of those bro country guys now, like Luke Bryan or something like that. I get it. They're all run together to me. So Mark Ford was in a band called Burning Tree from L.A. And they had opened for the Crowes several times. And Rich had called and offered him that spot. The same week that he was offered the spot in the Black Crowes, Slash called him and said, Izzy's leaving the band. You want to take Izzy's place?
Oh, wow.
And he said, I wouldn't fit with Guns N' Roses, and he went with the Crowes.
That's wild, man, how close that would have been.
I think he could have made it work on some of the stuff because, you know, he was more like an Izzy Stradlin. And you were talking about the Juju Hounds. Chris Robinson and Mark Ford of the Crowes got together with Jimmy Ashurst of the Juju Hounds, you know, who later went on to be in Buck Cherry, and then the drummer of Jellyfish, and recorded an album called Sweet Pickle Salad Sessions about that time as well.
That's wild.
So they were tied into that scene kind of loosely, and I think Ford came up in that scene, but I don't think he was a flashy player like DeMartini and those guys. He was a little more blues-based, but he was definitely around that Sunset Strip in the late 80s.
And didn't the Black Crowes play the Cat House once?
I'm sure they probably did. They probably did. Their first national tour, you guys will get a kick out of this, they opened for Junkyard.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And cool. Moneymaker blew up a couple of weeks into it. And, you know, they got pulled off that tour, and that's when they went with ZZ Top, you know, and they got thrown off the ZZ Top tour after about 2 or 3 weeks for, you know, Chris went on a rant about corporate sponsorship. The ZZ Top tour was sponsored by Miller Lite, and so they kicked him off. But yeah, they have a little bit of a history with that Guns N' Roses camp in that, you know, in the Sunset Strip, at least back in those days.
I had no idea.
And like I said, to look at them, you know, they could have been a part of that. If you just look at a picture of the band from that era,
yeah,
you wouldn't think Seattle, you would think L.A.
Yeah, well, like the bands like the London Choir Boys,
right,
had a very similar look to what they had. You know, right. It also goes back to Hanoi Rocks a little bit.
Sure, too. Definitely.
Yeah. So how do we want to do this with the songs? Do we want to just go through the albums and then we spin songs as we go? How do we want to go?
I can do whatever you guys want.
Let's do that. Let's just start at the beginning as far as albums go, and you school us up, and we'll pick our songs as we go.
All right, so Shake Your Moneymaker came out in 1990. George Draculius produced it. Of course, we know it blew up big time. And we're talking about how radio didn't know what to do with them. They also didn't know what to do with them when putting them on tours. So they did some of those tours in Europe with Metallica. Steve Gorman's got a book coming out, and he's constantly releasing little excerpts or whatever. And he talks a lot about the Metallica tour, and I think they really got along with like Lars and stuff like that. But then I think there was some time with Skid Row, and I don't think they got along very well with, you know, Sebastian Bach. But that first album, every song on it is good. It's not skippable in any skippable songs, except for Hard to Handle. I just, for whatever reason, it just never has done anything for me. It's a straight ahead rock record. It's got that Stone swagger, Faces vibe to it. She Talks to Angels was written by Rich when he was 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
It's about a goth girl in Atlanta. The other songs, I don't think they necessarily have any more deep meaning, but they toured relentlessly with that. And are you guys familiar with who Chuck Lavelle is?
No.
He's a piano player for the Stones.
Okay.
Has been since like the early 80s. He's from Georgia. He helped them some on that tour, and I think he may have actually played on that album. But they toured relentlessly and started road testing some of the songs that would be Southern Harmony on that. And Jeff Cease just couldn't cut the mustard. And so he was released at the end of that tour, and Mark Ford from Burning Tree was brought in, and they added maybe the biggest unsung hero of the Crows, a guy named Eddie Harsh on keyboards. Eddie was from Detroit and grew up. He played for like Muddy Waters and all these blues musicians. And I was listening to an interview the other day with Steve Gorman. He said, I've been on stage with a lot of musicians. I've been on stage, you know, with Derek Trucks. I've been on stage with Jimmy Page. Eddie Harsh is the greatest musician I've ever sat on stage with.
Wow.
He said that he upped their game because they were so scared that he was going to think they weren't good musicians, and they were just so amazing. And so he and Mark Ford created what I like to call the classic Crows sound, because the next three albums amongst Black Crows fans are considered the classic era, the Ford era is what they're referred to. And they were both so integral in that part, but it was the success of that first album that allowed them to go get Eddie Harsh and to get Mark Ford. And I think they had a lot of money going into them for the next album. But enough about me. What were y'all's thoughts about the first album?
At the time, I wasn't into it. But as, you know, time goes on and you start, you know, I ended up liking the Black Crowes, not on this album, on the next one is the one that really, well, not even really the next one. It'd be the third one, I think, is the one that really won me over.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, going back after that and listening to these albums, you know, and not feeling like, okay, these are the singles, these are the ones being jammed down my throat, to listen to it as a whole, I dig the first album. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty complete record, and you can tell this was basically where they... Like, this was, you know, with a lot of first albums, it's like where all the inspiration kind of came in. And, you know, I'm sure this was basically their set list when they were starting out. You know, and I agree with David, you know, Hard to Handle is hard to handle for me. Even before it got overplayed, I just never dug it. It's just not my thing. But, and that's, you know, other than that single, the other singles I think are great. I think Twice as Hard is a killer song to open record.
Like,
I mean, I love that slide guitar riff. That was one that I used to play in my bedroom a lot when I was learning guitar. Jealous Again is a great song. I think She Talks to Angels is great, but I'm going to go ahead and play my first song. And this is just a kick-ass rocker. This is a song called Strutting Blues.
Yeah.
that's probably my favorite song off that that first album for sure.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff on there though.
Yeah, Strut and Release, that is definitely one that sounds like 70s era Stones. And Chris Robinson hates the song.
Really?
And so, yeah, there's a website called Crow's Base. If anybody's ever interested, it's a catalog of every show they've ever played.
Wow.
You can search by set list or song. So I pull it up. They've only played it 51 times, but they have only played it twice since 1990, and that was both in 1992. I've never have heard his reasoning for disliking it. I've always thought it was a great sloppy garage band rock and roll song. Yeah. I mean, it's one that would, if you were at a bar and put that on the jukebox, people would say, "Oh, that's a pretty good song."
Yeah, the other song I was thinking about going with instead of that one was "Could I've Been So Blind." I think that's a great song, also.
Yeah. Oh, that's an amazing song. It's a great one to hear. That's a great one to hear live. You know, they don't play a lot. At least, well, they're not playing any of them now, but. They didn't play a ton off this album other than, you know, they never have played the same set list except for like maybe one tour. So you go see them three or four nights in a row and you may only get She Talks to Angels once.
Hmm.
But toward the end, they went more with like Could I've Been So Blind, Stare It Cold. That would get played a lot. And Seeing Things is always kind of a special one if you got that. But yeah, Stare It Cold, post 92, it's... It went on the chopping block, and they just completely forgot about it.
Hmm. Let's get into Southern Harmony. What can you tell us about that one, David?
All right, so this one debuted at number one on the charts. I've said this a million times. This is my favorite album of all time.
Wow.
There's not a sleeper song on it. It's sequenced perfectly. The songs on it, to me, are just them, a band that went into studio, went straight from the tour into the studio. They'd been road testing these songs. Depending on who you talk to, this was recorded in either 13 days or 17 days. And some of the songs, I forget which one, I think I heard Gorman say is a first take.
Mm.
And so it's they're in the studio with Mark Ford now. And if you listen to the soloing, it's definitely an upgrade from Jeff Cease. Eddie Harsh is adding a ton with the keyboards on songs like A Thorn in My Pride, Battle Up, Blue Eyes, Goodbye, Sometimes Salvation. You can really hear his influence on the keys and on Remedy. But the album starts off with Sting Me, which is one of my favorite songs of theirs. And like I said, they don't play the same set list, but Sting Me, if it's going to get played, always got played as the second song.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris usually introduced the song. He said they call this rock and roll music, and they would go into it. And a lot of the second solo is Mark Ford. And so a lot of people, Morgans, that's what Black Crowes fans are called, say that's when the Ford era started, on the second solo of Sting Me. But, of course, Remedy was the big hit. They opened up the VMAs that year. That's the same VMAs that like Guns N' Roses was on and Motley Crue when they had their argument in Nirvana. They opened it up. Chris is wearing like pot leaf pants and he's dressed like a pimp. And, you know, they go into Remy. That was a huge song. And then Thorn in My Pride was big. And then you got the slowdown section of Sometimes Salvation, which is got one of my favorite Mark Ford solos. And then Bad Blue Eyes, a great bluesy song. But then you kick into Hotel Illness, Black Moon Creeping. And then the first song that I was going to suggest, No Speak, No Slave, that song gets me going every time. It's a song, like I said, they don't play the same set list. It's a song that they'll freely open a show with, close a show with, or encore with. And when they play it live, they have an extended intro. And there's a clip of them playing it in 1992 on the Highs the Moon tour. If people out there don't think the Black Crowes were a rock and roll band, watch that video and watch the whole thing and the intensity that they play with. And Chris Robinson is literally dancing like a man that's possessed.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. And that Highs the Moon tour that's one of those things I'm kicking myself. I had a chance to go see it and didn't go see it. And I know a lot of people that have seen a lot of shows say that's the best tour they've ever seen. We'll be right back. No Speak, No Slave, a great song. The lyrics kind of open for interpretation. My interpretation of it is you have people that say they don't want to live in a corporate world. They don't want to live by, you know, society's rules, but yet there they are with a 9-to-5 job. There they are, you know, falling in line. And so don't speak like a slave. You know, if you're not, when you say that and then you keep on doing that, you're acting like a slave to the system. And so kind of deep lyrics on that one, but that is a great rocker for sure. And then the second song that I picked is my morning song, which comes next. It's my favorite Black Crowes song. Lots of times they'll stretch it out 15, 16 minutes. It's one of those songs that in my opinion has everything that's great about music. It's just got this cool vibe to it. The way they stretch it out and they come out of the jam and they build it up for probably 2 or 3 minutes. And Chris is like singing like a Southern Baptist preacher. And it just builds and it builds and it builds and it builds. And when they launch back into it, it's just musical nirvana. We'll be right back. that one, it's like I said, it's my favorite Crow song. If somebody was like, give me three songs to listen to by them, it's going to be one. And then that album closes with a very mellow number by Bob Marley, Time Will Tell, which I think is perfect because the second half of that album is wide open. And you just need something to bring you down on the way out, and that's exactly what that does.
Yeah, I always like it when bands would finish an album with kind of a mellow track. Just, yeah. It seems to be a great way to finish a record. And that's kind of a lost art these days. People don't really pay attention to stuff like that anymore. But you're right. And that's a great Marley cover. I like Shake Your Money Maker better than this record. I always have. This one's good, but to me, I don't know. They went a little bit more southern on this one than on the first one. The first one's a little bit more straight ahead rock and roll. It's just all preferences, though. But I think Aaron and I are in agreement that Remedy just definitely got played to death. It's a decent song, but good Lord, you couldn't escape that song during that time.
The first times I heard that song, I thought they were asking for Lemonade. I'm serious. For the longest time, I thought they were looking for Lemonade in that song, but no, they want Remedy. That makes so much more sense. And another song on here, I would have picked this one, but I actually played it on the show probably just a few weeks ago, was a bonus track. I think it's a cover song, but it's called 99 Pounds, and I played that not too long ago, but that's one of my favorite Crow songs.
Mm-hmm. That one definitely has kind of a 70s rock sound to it.
For sure. That's what I like about it. You know what's kind of else is interesting about the Black Crowes to me is that, like, their ties with Aerosmith, sonically, the way they sound. It's like the Black Crowes were influenced by Aerosmith, but then would go on to influence Aerosmith. You know what I mean? That doesn't happen very often in rock history where you're inspired by a band that came, you know, a generation or two before you, but then that band's still around while you're putting out stuff. And in this era, like when Aerosmith and the Black Crowes are creating music at the same time, I can really hear some of this in Aerosmith where, like, maybe Joe Perry and Steven Tyler are listening to the Black Crowes going, you know what? These guys are kind of what's good about us. Maybe we should try to revisit some of this bluesier, mellowed out kind of stuff. You know, I see them how the influence goes both ways with those two bands. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, and they toured with them for a while. And Chris and Rich and Mark, they always got along with those kind of guys on a musical level. And so, you know, you would see them pop up and play with other bands. They were real big on that. If somebody was in town, hey, you want to jump on stage with us and play? And Aerosmith was no difference. And yeah, I definitely think Aerosmith probably listened to that and goes, you know what? That's kind of what we used to do. And we got away from it. Maybe we ought to try getting back to it a little bit.
So I'm guessing this was one that you were in line on release day to buy.
I wasn't. It had been out about a week before I got it. And initially when I first got it, I was kind of disappointed in it because it wasn't Shake Your Moneymaker. It's one that once I really became ingrained with them that I just fell completely in love with. I've got it. My wife got it framed for me 1 year for my birthday. I've got it up on the wall. And my goal is to get everybody that's still alive on it to sign it. But it's just it's kind of the holy grail for me of rock albums. I put it up there with like Dark Side of the Moon, Exile on Main Street, other albums that like if I listen to, I listen to them all the way through. Mm-hmm. And so this is one, even with streaming services, I started Sting Me and Let It Ride.
Nice.
So
I'm glad we're talking to D-Hud about this. His heart is in it.
Yeah, I mean, you sound like us talking about Kiss.
Yeah.
So let's get into State of Amorica, or let's get into Amorica, not State of Amorica. That's your podcast. But right. First thing that strikes me about this is the album cover, because I remember how controversial this album cover was.
This was the one that really won me over and made me a Black Crowes fan.
just due to the album cover?
No, I actually, when I bought this one, this was the first Black Crowes album that I actually went out and purchased, and I don't remember where I got it from, but I ended up with the pube-free version.
The Walmart version.
Yeah,
it was very controversial, especially back then. And I think it's actually a cover of a Penthouse magazine photo shoot. I think it's where they got it from. You know, I wonder, they're not known really for being publicity hounds and doing things, you know, to be trendy or whatever. But I don't think there's any getting around. This was done for shock value.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, they want to screw with people, so that's why they did it.
If you're not familiar with the Amorica album cover, it's basically a crotch shot of a woman in a red, white, and blue American flag-style bikini bottoms with a little something creeping over the
top. Oh, yeah, there's full Bush going on
it's
here.
70s style for sure, just like the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
Now, this album was very, very expensive to record. They actually recorded basically 2.5 albums in between Southern Harmony and this. They had a weekend in New Orleans at a Daniel Lanois studio, and they recorded 4 songs. One of them is a song called Exit, which a lot of people think is the best Black Crowes song ever, and it's never been officially released. And it was very hard rock, very, very groove-oriented. But then they went out to California and recorded what was going to be an album called Tall, T-A-L-L. And what was going on was Chris said, I'm going to produce it, and Rich said, I'm going to produce it. So Chris would go into there in the day, wipe out all of Rich's stuff. Rich would go in at night, wipe out all of Chris's stuff. And so it's a lot of the songs that eventually made it onto Amorca, but it's a very raw album. And you can actually find it under a compilation album called The Lost Crowes. And like one of those songs that sticks out is High Head Blues. It's a much rawer, a little more psychedelic version on Tall, but they eventually get their stuff together and record Amorca, and A Conspiracy was the lead single. That's a pretty heavy song for them, and I won't go song by song on it, but really highlights Ed Harsh on She Gave Good Sunflower, and then two of the most classic Crowes songs, Wiser Time, mm-hmm. which they play pretty much about every show, and everybody in the band gets a solo at, and then the closing title track, Descending, honestly is one of those beautiful pieces of music I've ever heard. If you've ever lost someone to addiction or something like that, listen to this song. And it's just the piano playing at the beginning and the end by Eddie Harsh. Still to this day, it makes the hair stand up on my arms. And a couple of weeks ago, my best friend growing up died. And
he was my first
music buddy. And we started playing guitar together and going to Black Crowes and everything together. And when my sister called and said he'd passed, within 5 minutes, I had this song on. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very personal song for me. It's absolutely beautiful. But this album has a lot of ear candy to it. They brought in a percussionist. It's very well recorded. And it's probably their most diverse album. Like I said, you have songs like A Conspiracy that are a little heavier, but then you have Wiser Time and Ballad and Urgency and Descending, which are a lot more mellow. And Nonfiction was a really mellow song. But this album fluctuates between number 2 and number 3 for me in the pecking order, depending on what kind of mood I'm in. But it didn't do as well as Southern Harmony because they started getting more into the jam band stuff. And I like that. I like all aspects of the band. They started, you know, jamming some stuff out and getting involved in the Grateful Dead scene. And so, as Steve Gorman said, you know, on our third album, we alienated 85% of our audience that we've been building up on our first two albums. And he's like, who does that on purpose? But it's a great album. I love it a lot. And it's probably their most diverse album.
Most definitely. I picked a song off here, and you mentioned it earlier, High Head Blues, which is one of my all-time favorite Crowes songs. And it was really the one that made me go, okay, I need to take a closer look at this band. Mm-hmm. Because I remember hearing it. But another thing I remember about it, and this is just, you know, I guess this would have been like my senior year in high school, 94, when this came out. And I was just a little pothead. Mm-hmm. And me and my buddies would sit around and smoke weed, and we'd read High Times magazines. And High Times always had like a rating in there. And it had nothing to do with anything. It was just whatever was topical at the moment and, you know, what was popular. And High Head Blues was a song title that was always on this list at that time. You'd open up the High Times magazine, and they're talking about the Black Crowes, which, for High Times magazine, what better band? Yeah, what better band you got to represent what you're all about? And I remember being a little stoner, reading that, going, you know what? I really ought to give this band another try. And High Head Blues, it's a cool tune. It's got, man, it's hard to say what it is, because there's moments in it where it's kind of mellow, and there's moments in it where it's kind of bluesy, and it's got weird stuff going on in it, but then there's the spots in the song where it really kicks in and rocks. And yeah, definitely, probably, absolutely my number one favorite Black Crowes song.
We'll be right back.
highlight of any show that I've been to when they play it. Chris loves playing it, loves singing it. Very trippy, like you said, in parts. And yeah. I just found out that that was actually a song that he wrote on acoustic guitar back when people didn't know he played guitar. So that goes with that song. Yeah, it's a great one. It's one of those ones off that album whenever he gets played live, really gets a great reaction, even from like casual fans, because even casual fans have heard it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it had a video and everything, didn't it?
It did, and I think it was pretty psychedelic. Yeah, they were really into the psychedelics at this time. Matter of fact, they did a quote-unquote like album release video where they just did a ton of drugs, and everybody did a ton of drugs, and they just filmed it, them playing in like a studio or a warehouse or something in L.A., and like everybody was dressed up like animals, and it got really, really weird. And, you know, I've seen clips of it, but – you know, they've all said that's never seen the light of day.
Oh, wow.
You know, but I forgot to mention my other song that I picked was technically from that Tall album, but on some of the reissues, I think is on Amorca. It's a song called Tied Up and Swallowed. That's a hard rocking song. It's got a very cool intro where Rich is playing with the volume pedal. And this is a classic case of them never really officially releasing this, but during this time frame playing it an awful lot, and they would continue to play it throughout their career, even though it didn't get officially released until like 2008. And they were very big on that, playing their B-sides, playing unreleased songs that sometimes they never even released. And the fan base was so into them that they would play something like Tied Up and Swallowed and get the same reaction as they would, you know, some of their, you know, more well-known songs.
That's cool. You got to respect that about a band like that, that can go out and do that, you know, especially like us coming from Kiss fans, you know, that we're constantly bitching about the set list, that, you know, our favorite bands won't diversify and play some of these deeper cuts and everything, even though you know they'd get a great reaction. That's what I love about a band like the Black Crowes, that aren't afraid to bust out a song that might be, you know, something that was never released or a B-side or something. But the fans are so into the band that they're going to pop for it every time, no matter what it is, because it's something unique that you don't get to hear all the time.
Right.
Got to love and respect a band that'll do that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I did. I noticed, you know, we've got our picks laid out in front of me for which albums these things came from. We basically have to skip two albums before we get to the next song pick. So, David, what do you want to go over Three Snakes and One Charm and By Your Side real fast?
Yeah, real quick. Three Snakes and One Charm is my second favorite album by them. It's a straight up drug album. There's no other way around it. Both them doing it and then, you know, singing about the consequences of it. It's very dark at times. It's also very beautiful at times. And this is the one probably where if you're just strictly a hard rock fan, you probably checked out on because it has some very, very mellow moments. Like I said, it's pretty druggy, but doesn't really have any hard songs on it. They were on the Further Festival, which was a kind of Grateful Dead inspired festival, and they played on it. And this is where things got kind of went off the rails for them on that tour with drug use by Ed Harsh and Mark Ford. But I love the album. I encourage people. Under a Mountain is a great song. Better When You're Not Alone is a great song. Blackberry and Nebuchadnezzar were kind of rocking songs that were on there. But so the Further Festival, and this is where things get controversial, ends, and they fire Mark Ford. And Ford was the glue that made that band what they were. There's something about when he plays with Rich Robinson's rhythm playing that neither one of them can replicate without each other. And he was in bad shape. And so they sent him home, and they signed with Columbia. And basically Columbia said, you're going to put out Shake Your Moneymaker Part 2. And they go and record with Kevin Shirley. I'm sure you guys are familiar with him.
Oh yeah.
Producer. He's done everybody. And so they were kind of forced into that. And then he glossed that album up so much that it just doesn't sound like them. And had that album come out second, it was after Shake Your Moneymaker, it would have done a whole lot better with the fan base. But so many people like me had gotten into that kind of jam band part of them, and they stopped that, and this was an obvious sellout. Now, there's some songs on there that are good. This is an album, if I could ask them to go back and re-record, I would. But, you know, they had songs like Go Faster and Stop Kicking My Heart Around all over the radio and By Your Side and Only a Fool. But that one, and they brought in Audley Freed, who I'm sure you guys are aware of. He's a Nashville guy. You know, he's played with Sheryl Crow, Dixie Chicks. He's played with a lot of people. Brought him in kind of as a gunslinger. And Johnny Colt, the bass player, left. And they brought in Sven Pippian then to play. And so they do By Your Side, and the Black Crowes fans just kind of really rejected it. But then they do that Jimmy Page tour, and that kind of brought some new life and vigor into the band. And a real quick side note, it's going to come out in Steve Gorman's book that after they toured with Page, Page went to him and said, let's do an album together called The Black Crowes with Jimmy Page. Hmm. And apparently, according to Steve Gorman, Rich Robinson didn't want to do it. And Gorman sounds like he's still to this day upset about it. And so they kind of went into the wilderness there for a while with By Your Side. And I mean, they went from dressing like hippies to going on Tonight Show, and Chris just looks like a straight up pimp.
I'm looking at the album cover right now.
Well, yeah, that's got to be kind of tricky too. I mean, you're the lead guitarist in a band, and now all of a sudden Jimmy Page wants to join your band. You know, it's like, wait a minute.
Right.
What am I supposed to do if Jimmy Page is in here playing guitar?
Get coffee.
Yeah.
Well, and the strong rumor was, you remember when Led Zeppelin got back together for that one show, like 10 or so years ago, and Jason Bonham played?
Yeah.
The strong rumor, and no, I've never heard anybody refute it, was Page said if Bonham didn't do it, Gorman was going to be the guy they were going to go to play with him. So he's highly, highly respected. But yeah, so they do that tour with Page, and you know, that brings us to Lines, and I think we both have songs off Lines that we both picked.
Before we jump into Lions, I'd just like to slide back for a minute to Three Snakes and a Charm and One Charm. That actually, there are some songs on here I really like quite a bit. Nebuchadnezzar is one of my favorite Black Crowes songs. I could have picked that. It's not quite as heavy, but you know, Black Crowes aren't really, what we're doing today is kind of tricky because Black Crowes aren't known for being a really heavy band.
There's plenty of ballads I could have spun.
There's some really damn good stuff. And some other things I really like off of that one are the B-sides of the Bob Marley cover Pimper's Paradise.
Yes.
Which is just killer. And they also do a cover of Mellow Down Easy by Willie Dixon that I just absolutely love. I love the Bob Marley cover. I love the Willie Dixon cover. And I love the song Nebuchadnezzar off that a lot.
The Mellow Down Easy, they always play it in conjunction with the song off of there called, off of Three Snakes, called Let It Ride. it always follows it. The songs are never played by themselves. And yeah, there's also another bonus track on there called Just Say You're Sorry that's actually really good and catchy. I think could have gone to radio and done something.
Yeah. Off of By Your Side, I always like the song Horsehead.
Yeah, that's like a good one.
That's kind of a good rocking tune.
That's a very heavy song, that actually. That's probably, sonically, it's probably the heaviest thing they've ever done.
Yeah, see, that was one I kind of struggled with. I wanted to kind of space it out a little bit more, but yeah, Horsehead should have definitely been on my list, I think.
So let's get into Lions, released on May 7th, 2001. What do you got for us on this one, Dave?
All right, so that was their first album with V2 Records, which was an offshoot of Virgin Records, and they went into New York to record it with Don Was. I'm sure you guys are familiar with him.
Oh, yeah.
And they did not have a bass player, really, for these sessions, so Don Was played on some of the songs, and Rich Robinson actually played on some of the songs. And he did not, from what I understand, I do not think he let Audley Freed really contribute during the recording. And so this one's got a little bit of a different sound to it. A lot of Crows fans think this is the worst album they've ever put out. I don't think that, actually. Probably have it at number 4 or 5, depending on the day of the week. There's some really good songs on it, and it was kind of a rebirth for them with a couple of songs like Soul Singing that really put them back on the radio. But one of the songs that I chose is the opening track, Midnight from the Inside Out, which has one of the coolest intros I've ever heard. I don't know if it's on purpose or if it was just a bad take. They go to start the song and then stop it, and Rich or somebody's off key, and he just lets the note hang, and then he goes right back into the song. And really, really heavy song. They used this as the opener for pretty much every show on that tour, which it was this tour was the first time I ever saw them. And so the song's kind of always had a special place in my heart. The lyric in there, a needle and a spoon is cotton candy, so I think we know what the song is about. Mm-hmm. But really, just a really heavy song lyrically and sonically, and I love hearing them play it a lot. But the album has some really good songs on it. Soul Singing, I think, is the last like really great song they wrote together. Songs like Greasy Grass River and Cypress Tree, those are heavy songs. You know, like those are Cypress heavy Tree. Songs for
yeah,
them.
That's yeah. a good one.
But yeah, they really caught a lot of flack over this album and this tour. This is a tour where they didn't really shake up the set list a whole lot, and this kind of period is just kind of a lot of people kind of whitewash it and try not to think about it, honestly, but that's not the case for me.
No, me neither. And I know Chris picked a song that I also would have picked, but he beat me to it.
Yeah,
but I talk about the song Lickin', and I remember when that came out as a single.
Yeah,
I thought, well, this is the coolest, heaviest thing that I've ever heard the Black Crowes do. This sounds like something that should have been coming out in 89.
Yeah.
It would have been a huge hit. And I remember it being a big deal, but it's just that fuzzy, funky bass line in that song that just drives me wild every time I hear it. But I also remember at the time, like, hardcore Black Crowes fans being like, this is not what I like about the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
But me on the other side of that going, this is one of the best Black Crowes songs I've ever heard. And just them looking at you like, nope, this isn't right.
No, I love it because it's almost like a combination of a funk song and a sleaze rock song, because like they're actually singing about sex, you know, which is, You know,
they're like a mule, I'm kicking, you're going to catch a lick.
Yeah, that line is fucking genius. I mean, that's one of my favorite lines in rock history.
Yeah, as they look back to bullet holes, and you don't ever say me, you knock me out with the way you talk. I like the way you say, baby, you want a mouthful of Scorpio, you bought my poison be tasted.
Going, you know, digging into the discography again, and when it came up, I'm like, oh my god, I forgot how much I love this song. Yeah. And I was, for speaking of drug use, I was in the height of my drug use when this song came out on the radio, and I remember jamming to this song quite a bit at parties and stuff. And but yeah, see, you Dave, you come from a different perspective. You're come from the hardcore Black Crowes fan, so you know, from what I gather, this is not a well received song among the fan base.
Man, it's all right. So let me ask you guys opinion of this. Do you guys like what's the Kiss song, the disco song? I was made for loving you.
Yes.
All right. What's your opinion on that?
I've never been a giant fan of it.
No, me neither. It's so different from anything else Kiss.
All right.
It's so different from everything I love about Kiss.
Yeah.
But let me ask
you this. If that same song came out, same vocals and everything, but let's say the name of the band was the Bee Gees that put it out. Mm-hmm. What would you like it?
Well, it's the greatest Bee Gees song ever released, obviously.
All right, so that's my problem with this song. It's the fact that it's a Black Crowes song, and so I'll admit it's very interesting the way Rich is playing. Is that a toggle switch he's playing with on it, Chris?
I think so. Well, there's a lot of wah going on in there too.
Yeah, I mean it's a very interesting song, and I give him props for that. On one of our podcasts, we broke this album down, and I said, if you would have told me this was a Def Leppard song or a Poison song, I would absolutely love it. But when you're listening to it, you're listening to it. Like if you go from Three Snakes to that, that's not the same thing. And so that's the kind of the crazy position they were in. They'd built this extremely loyal fan base that did not want to hear this. But then that song got a lot of play on the radio and brought them some new fans. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't on mm-hmm. that. But they played it a lot on that tour. And I'll admit, I mean, it's got it's catchy. And, you know, it's got some – Chris's vocals on it are great. Oh, yeah. Just for me, being a fan of like Three Snakes, it just didn't fit in. If you'd have said this was, which I love Def Leppard, they're one of my favorite bands. If you're like, hey, this is a Def Leppard song, I'm cranking it and loving it. And I think that's the problem that they ran into with a couple of songs on this album was they were trying to appeal to people to get the casual fan, and the diehards kind of thought, well, they've forgotten about us.
Wow.
Man, if only Def Leppard would have been releasing songs that good in 2001.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not go into that discussion. But yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I remember it coming out and certainly was a breath of fresh air compared to a lot of the shit that was on the radio at the
right.
time.
Yep. Tell me about it. I'm working at the radio station. So when this comes across the desk and they're like, hey, this is the new Black Crowes song. I'm like, oh, great. Here's another one I'm going to get sick of listening to. And then it comes on. I'm like, oh, man, this is badass. I love it.
Interesting to get both perspectives on this.
Yeah, I like that album. I like Lions. That was one that I definitely, as soon as I heard that song, I went out and got it. And there's some other stuff on there I really like. Like you said, Cypress Tree, awesome song.
Well, and they were ahead of the curve a little bit on this one. When you bought it, the sticker said, buy the Crowes, get the shows, or something like that. And so if you bought the album, it came with a download code, and you could go on a website and download an MP3 of one of their shows for free.
Oh, yeah,
and so they were
right.
one of the first bands that really did that.
That's pretty interesting. So this album, a lot of fans just try to discount. Is this their music from The Elder, essentially?
It is. A lot of people will tell you By Your Side is that, but more people will tell you Lines. A lot of people concede that By Your Side, had it been recorded better, that they would have enjoyed it more. It hadn't have all the sheen and gloss on it. I think like songs like Come On and Lickin' off, and there's a song on there that's just absolutely horrific called Ozone Mama. I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
It is bad. You know, lock me in a room with that if you're interrogating me, and I'm going to give up whatever information I have. But then there's people like me and Ian who does my podcast with me. We both really liked the album. You know, we went through it track by track, and I think there were four tracks that I scratched off of it. And then I'm like, this is a really good album if you take those tracks off. But that, you know, that album was the demise of them for a while. They called it quits for 4 years at that point after that tour.
Yeah, and then it goes to 2008 with War Paint.
Yeah, so they got back with Mark Ford in 2005, and the shows were so well received. They were, you know, selling out left and right, and they really got back to the Crowes of that Three Snakes era. And they made a mistake in staying on the road too long. And some of the demons that had affected Mark Ford in the past were affecting him again. Mm-hmm. And he abruptly quit 4 days before the second leg of that tour. And because he said he was committed to his sobriety and he had to go home, which I respect that, but it put them in a bad situation. They had all these shows booked. So they called on this guy named Paul Stacey, who was a big producer for like Oasis, and he's a good guitar player. And he just stepped in 4 days and got them through that tour. And they disbanded for a year or two and then got back for War Paint. And they brought on Luther Dickinson, who is in a band called the North Mississippi All-Stars out of Mississippi. And their dad, Bruce Dickinson, is the guy that played the piano on Wild Horses. And he was a really famous music producer in Memphis, did Big Star and The Replacements and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah,
and he brought more of a bluesy.
Who needs more cowbell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought more of a bluesy feel to him. But this is where the cracks were really starting to show in the songwriting between Chris and Rich. Chris was starting to really get more into the singer-songwriter vibe and to kind of the Grateful Dead vibe. The tracks on it really, really show that. This is my least favorite one of them. There's a song in there called Moving Down the Line I like, and Oh Josephine, and that's about it. Largely a forgettable album for me.
I kind of like Wounded Bird. I think that's an all right song, but I think, yeah, definitely this is probably my least favorite also.
Did you like Wounded Bird when it was The Seeker?
Oh, yeah. That's maybe what I like about it. But also, probably their coolest album cover.
Yeah, it's a cool album cover.
It really is. Yeah, I'll agree with you on that.
The artwork on there is pretty kick-ass. I like it. I remember seeing that going, oh, wow, look at this album cover, and then listening to it going, not so much, Black Crowes. You know, sometimes you can't judge a CD by its album cover.
Interesting that it came out on Megaforce Records.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I guess that's the time the record industry was tanking anyway, and it didn't really matter who put you out, but that's an odd one for sure.
Yeah, you know, Ace Frehley, Megadeth,
right.
and the Black Crowes. I don't know. So where does this one fit in with the diehards? Is this one well received, or is it
another
one that people don't really care for it?
No, don't like it. Most people pick out two or three songs, like I said, and go with, and the rest is largely, in my opinion, forgettable. There's a song on there called Whoa Mule at the end that is, it's really bad. And I think Chris really loved playing it. It seemed like after that album came out, I've seen them like 20 times or so. And wow. It seems like after that album came out, every show I went to, they played that. And that was always, I got to go out and get a beer or go to the bathroom. But yeah, it wasn't. But now the thing is, though, Luther Dickinson's playing was very well received because the stuff that he played on was right up his alley. He's one of the, I would say he's probably a top four or five slide guitar player in the world right now. He's up there with Derek Trucks. I mean, Derek Trucks would tell you he's one of the best slide guitarists. So he really helped out some of those kind of earthly organic sounds and added a little touch to it, for which is what they needed at the time, because that's where the direction the music was going.
Mm-hmm. Well, what must it have been like, I mean, for you and other hardcore Black Crowes fans? Now the band's been gone for a while, and then all of a sudden you get Chris Ford back in the band. I mean, expectations got to be pretty high, and then it all falls apart, and then it's, I don't know, do you feel like maybe ahead of time you might feel a little let down before you even got to hear it?
No, because this is probably the most anticipated album of my life.
Yeah.
For looking for one coming out. And I remember I went and bought 3 or 4 copies just to give to people, to give away to people.
Wow.
That I thought, you know, would like it. And I remember the first couple of days I was doing the thing. I was telling myself, oh, it's just, you're just not listening to it right. It's really good. It's really good. And then I just had to come to the conclusion that it's not good. And their albums sometimes change for me depending on what kind of mood I'm in. Regardless of the mood, this one is at the bottom.
I can just picture in my mind 2008, D-Hud's running down the street. He's got a big sack full of CDs and he's throwing them out to people. Look, they're back, everybody. It's the Black Crowes. Here you go. One for you, one for you, one for you. They're back.
And then a day later, they come by and throw them back at him.
I know. Man, hey, I tried to do my part. Yeah. I tried to do my part and spread the love. But yeah, that was... Not that was that That's wasn't awesome. The one to try to win people over with.
So, yeah. Gotta give it to him for trying.
Yeah,
that's
give it to you
cool.
for that. Yeah, I think I gave somebody a copy of Psycho Circus as a gift, and boy, do I feel remorse over that.
But use it for a beer coaster.
That's about all it's good for. Okay, so we go to the last studio album they've ever released from 2009, Before the Frost Until the Freeze. What can you say about this one?
All right, so this is one of the coolest recording sessions that I think anybody's ever done. So Luther Dickinson's still in the band, and you guys are familiar with the band, right? You know, the weight and all,
oh,
you know.
Sure.
All right, so LaVon Helm, their drummer, owns a barn / studio / performance center out in the middle of nowhere, like Woodstock, New York. And so he's real famous for on Sunday nights having these things called LaVon's Midnight Rambles.
There's a great documentary about LaVon Helm that has a lot of footage of that place.
Right on.
I've seen it. It's great. It was on Netflix. Yep. And so Chris Robinson really got involved in that whole scene. And so they were writing material for a new album. And basically what they did was the entire band went up there for probably about 2 months in the middle of the winter. And there's a DVD about it called Cabin Fever. And so they work on these songs. Well, then they decide we want to record them in front of a live audience. And so they did this lottery or whatever to get these tickets. And like you couldn't bring a cell phone in, cameras, nothing. And so people would go in and listen to an entire show of music they've never heard. They would take the best of those takes and put them on the album. Mm-hmm. And they would ask people, I think, not to clap at the end. There's a couple where if you're really listening, you can hear some noise, you know, people clapping at the end. So it was originally going to be a double album called Before the Frost, After the Freeze. Before the Frost was more electric, and then After the Freeze part was more kind of folk music, country, almost bluegrass at times, because they involved LaVon Helm's band with them. And, you know, that's kind of the more Americana-type music he played.
Right.
So there were like 4 weekends in a row on Saturday and Sunday nights, everybody sitting by the computer trying to get a report from people, you know, what the song sounded like. And so they released it. It's got some good material on there. Good Morning Captain, the opening song is really cool. It's got kind of like a ragtime piano. There is a heavy song on there called Been a Long Time Waiting on Love. And then there's some really kind of interesting songs on there. There's one that you guys are going to mention here in a second that's interesting. But then they have a song called And the Band Played On. And it's I would say 50% of that album I really like. The other 50% I'm kind of so-so on. But the After the Freeze portion, they released separately only on iTunes. And they released it in the order that it was intentionally going to be a double album. It actually tells a story if you listen to it like that. And they recently re-released that on vinyl, like 1,000 copies. And I was lucky enough to get one. This one is one where Luther Dickinson really shines, his guitar playing on it. Chris has great vocals on it. And this one at first wasn't as high up on my list, but it has moved up as the years go on. But it's overall, it's a decent album. It's got some stinkers on there, but it's got some good ones as well.
I always like the song I Ain't Hiding off of this one. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good rocking tune. And that was actually my last pick. So I wanted to get something towards the end of their career. And this was a song off here that I always liked. And it's called I Ain't Hiding. Just on my pickups and blood on the stage. Seeds in the ashtray.
Unique song, I think, in the Crow's catalog. Rich Robinson hates it. He will not even refer to it. He will not even refer to it by its name. He calls it the disco song.
Wow. Rich Robinson hates all my favorite Black Crow songs.
Well, and this was kind of a, this was honestly kind of a forerunner of what Chris Robinson's solo career was going to be with the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. A little more eclectic, more Grateful Dead, kind of cosmic type music. I actually like I Ain't Hiding. I understand why people dislike it. Chris plays it with his solo band, but I think when they broke up, Rich is probably like, I never have to play this again, and I'm a happy camper. But I understand why Crows fans don't like it, and at times I have felt that. But once I just kind of opened my mind up to it, this is a very kind of cool, unique tune that you don't hear them doing anything like this.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier about, like, I don't remember which album it was. They said they were recording, like, Rich would go in and do his demos, then Chris would come in and wipe them off, and then back and forth.
You got a whole Dio Iommi thing going on there.
But we heard that same story from John Regan when we interviewed him, because he was playing on the Rolling Stones' Dirty Work album, and he would Keith would bring him in to do bass tracks late at night with him over his own demos. And, like, he would wipe out Mick Jagger stuff. And then Mick Jagger would go in the next day and wipe out Keith stuff. So, like, they're literally emulating the Rolling Stones even in that respect.
Right.
Wow. And it's the whole brother rivalry thing. It's just, you know, it's like that. You know, aside from all the great music, the such a soap opera between those two guys. And I actually got caught up watching some YouTube interviews with Chris Robinson earlier today. And, you know, HuffPost was doing an interview with Chris Robinson from a few years ago, and they just basically put him on the spot. They were like, you know, so, you know, is it hard to not, or how are you and your brother getting along? And he's like, we don't. And he's like, well, is that a hard thing to deal with? He's like, well, when you've never really had a great relationship, it doesn't really matter. And it's just like, David, what is your take on this? I mean, obviously, it seems like those two are kind of then they're butting heads is kind of the main reason you don't have a Black Crowes today, right?
Because it's been 10 years since the release of their final album. Why don't we have a Black Crowes anymore?
All right. So they apparently have never gotten along. And some of Gorman's book, which comes out the end of September, has leaked. And I don't know like the genesis of it initially, but I mean, they come to blows in the studio. He's like, yeah, how many times I've seen them punch each other in the face.
Wow.
I think they have two totally different personalities. Chris has this really big, gregarious, outgoing, like he, you know, when he comes in a room, he takes up a lot of space. Actually a very funny person. You know, he gets a rap as being this kind of negative, smart aleck guy, which he is. And he freely admits that. But then I met him a year ago at a meet and greet. It may have been because I was paying $150 to meet him. I don't know. But he was as cool to me as he could be. And it was a really special moment for me because like I told my wife, like, I'll never want to meet him again. Because I met him one time and it was like we started talking about like the album covers and like how they're designed. And he just, you know, he loves that kind of stuff. But Rich always – people always thought that Rich was a sourpuss and just was always in a bad mood because of his stage demeanor. But he's since, you know, been interviewed saying, look, I kind of had to hold the band together while we're on stage. You know, we did a lot of improvising and I was kind of the band leader. So I was having to, concentrate on that. But they just don't get along. And they have not spoken in 5 years.
Wow.
You know, Rich has children that have never met Uncle Chris, you know, and vice versa.
That's
and
sad. That is sad.
It's really sad. And their father died about 6 years ago. And their father, I wish I could remember the name of the band. He was in a band in the 50s and 60s that had a chart-topping hit.
Yeah.
His name was Stan Robinson. And according to Gorman in the book, when their dad died, something changed in Chris. And so the reason they technically broke up was Gorman, Rich, and Chris were the three remaining members. They all three had an equal share in the band. And I guess it was in 13... they toured with Jackie Green, who's another guitar player. They toured with him, and I went to it, and it wasn't the best. But they were going to do a 25th anniversary tour in 2015, and they were going to put out all this. They have, like, probably 4 to 5 records of unreleased stuff that, honestly, is some of the best stuff they've ever done. Matter of fact, I think Keith Richards told him one time, he goes, you guys leave, like, hit singles in the vault and never release them. So they were going to do all of that, and Chris sent an email saying he wanted Rich's portion and Steve's portion, and he gets total control of the band.
Oh,
and Gorman was like, no. And, you know, and Gorman had, you know, had a very successful sports talk show in Nashville at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen it. He's got a new classic rock show that's going to be debuting in a couple of weeks. It's going to be based out of Nashville.
I heard about that, yeah.
But so, you know, it came down to money on that. And then Chris went on with his band, the Chris Robinson Brotherhood, which is kind of Grateful Dead-esque. And I initially pushed back on that and didn't like it. And one of those days, I said, you know what, it's stupid. Give it a fair listen. I love that band. But Rich and Mark Ford and Sven Pippian are back with a band called the Magpie Salute. Mm-hmm. And they are phenomenal. One of the best live bands I've ever seen. And they've got their second album coming out. And they play some Crowes songs and a lot of covers. Like their first tour, though, this will show you how great musicians they are. They played 205 different songs on their first tour.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, I don't awesome. Think, you know, Rich, well, first of all, if they get back together after this book comes out, Steve Gorman's not going to be in it. I mean, it's apparently going to be, he's just apparently throwing some haymakers.
Yeah.
And Rich has said, like, why would I go back to that negativity? I'm happy. I'm with Mark Ford and we're producing new music. And so,
right.
They have a lot in common with the Oasis brothers, with the Gallagher brothers from Oasis.
Similar.
And oddly enough, they toured together in 2001. both the Crowes and Oasis said it's the most fun they've ever had on a tour.
You got this brother and this brother hanging out over here bitching about this brother and this brother over here going, man, this is great. I wish I could have you around all the time. You really get me. You understand my situation.
And if they didn't call that the sibling rivalry tour, then they really missed out on a great marketing angle.
That's what it was called, I believe.
Oh, yeah. perfect. Okay, because that hit me. I'm like, sibling rivalry tour. And that's
the,
perfect.
The other opening band was Space Hog, and they're made up of brothers well.
Yeah, I remember Space Hog. They were all right.
Yeah, they had that In the Meantime song that was a hit.
Yeah. I don't think they're ever getting back together, and I kind of don't want them to, be honest with you.
I'm going to throw a theory out there on why Chris Robinson came with that ridiculous proposal of basically give me all your shares and then we'll get back together.
Don't want to.
He doesn't want to do it.
No,
so
they make a ridiculous.
He's like, I'm
offer.
Just going to make an offer where I know they'll say no to it. That's probably his way of just saying, fuck you guys. I don't want to work with you.
A lot of people have speculated that because he's gone all in on this. He likes to call it farm to table music. You know, it's really Grateful Dead like, and I really like a lot of it. Some of it I can do without. But for years, he's talked about, you know, basically not putting down the Crows, but just like, hey, that's a chapter in my life. It's in the past. Why would I go back to that? Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of doubled down on that, in my opinion. But yet he took a band out last year called As the Crow Flies with Marcus King on guitar and Audley Freed on guitar. And they just played Crow songs. So I don't know. You know, and a lot of people say that, you know, that both of the brothers are needing money. I don't know.
Well, that's what it'll come down to. Yeah. I mean, if they need the money bad enough, they'll do it.
Right.
And if people are still interested at that time, you know, and the longer it goes without Black Crows, you know, the more revered they'll become because people go, here's this great band. Well, let's go see them. You can't. They're not around anymore. They went away in the mid-2000s, you know. So, you know, what do they say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. And so the day, I believe, will come.
It'll happen.
When these guys will have the right situation where they'll have to swallow their pride and say, all right, damn it, let's do it. And then see if they kill each other in the process.
Probably will.
I think you're probably right.
Well, man, this has been a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, we got to promote your podcast because I'm sure a lot of Black Crows fans are going to be listening to this. So promote State of Amorica.
Yeah, so it's called State of America, and we have a Twitter account under that name, a Facebook account. We have a YouTube channel, an Instagram account, and we are located on basically every platform that you can get podcast. And we're on we're releasing episode 12 or 13 tomorrow. I can't remember, but give us a listen, and we'd really appreciate it. We're working on some big-name guests, but I mean, as you guys know, sometimes – the other party, it has to be the right time for them. So, right. But my buddy Ian, who does the podcast with me, he actually used to work with Mark Ford. So we're hoping some things like that pan out in the future. I think they will. But it's been a huge success. It's been much bigger than I knew that there was a niche out there for that. You know, there's like a ton of Kiss podcasts, Metallica podcast, and Oasis podcast, and then, you know, whatever, you know, and I was like, there's not a Black Crows podcast. And so many people have sent us just emails saying, wow, we really needed this and really appreciate it. And we try to keep it positive on there. We don't really take sides on a lot of this stuff because the Crows community can be very, very negative at times. And so a lot of people really appreciate that. But I really appreciate you guys letting me come on and talk about my favorite band, and hopefully next year we'll have a State of America table at Rockin' Pod.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And I definitely got to go check out your show because doing this today has rekindled my interest in the Black Crows.
Same
They've
here.
Always been a band that I've always kind of liked, but never really, really, truly got into. But this today makes me feel good about wanting to go back and really give it a better shot. And I think listening to your podcast will help me do that.
Well, I did run into somebody at Rockin' Pod that I think is as big of a Crows fan as me, and that's Ian Wadley.
Really? I didn't know that.
He and I sat out there and talked. He's like, I've got all the shows, all the bootlegs. And I mean, he was lighting up when I told him about the podcast. So we're actually going to have him on. And then, oddly enough, I started a conversation with Ralph Vieira in the hotel. Turns out he's a massive Oasis fan. And we're in there talking about these like very obscure B-sides. And so I had a really good time talking to those two guys. But Ian's going to come on at some point in the future.
That's great.
Those two never fail to surprise me.
Yeah, their taste is a lot wider than people really give them credit for. Even though Ian's a fan of The Cure, which, you know, he deserves a smack in the mouth for that. But thanks again for doing this, man. And also obviously promote Digital Killed the Radio Star, your other podcast.
Yeah, we are coming up on episode 100. I hunted down the lead guitar player and founding member of Blind Melon, Roger Stevens.
Oh, cool.
Who is from Mississippi, and we're based out of Mississippi. And so he's actually an attorney in Philadelphia now. But I told him, you know, I wanted to have him on, to have somebody from my home state for episode 100. And he said, you know, I don't do a lot of interviews, but I'll do this one for you. And he agreed to give us 20 minutes, but we wound up going over an hour.
Nice.
And talked a lot about the Shannon Hoon documentary that's coming out. So that episode's going to be out in probably a month or so. And we've lined up some possibly have Ricky Rockman coming on in a couple of weeks.
Very cool.
You should ask him and, about Black Crowes playing at the Cat House.
I will. But yeah, so we're having fun doing that. My buddy Caton, who was actually at the expo, he is starting to do more stuff with us. And we recently interviewed Striper for an hour, full band, which is kind of rare for them. And we're just enjoying it and having a lot of pinch me moments, especially like Rockin' Pie when you're at a bar and Dave Ellison's behind you and Michael Sweet's to the left and you're like, yeah, it's just another day.
Yeah, for sure.
And I will still continue to promote the interviews you guys have done with Todd Poole from Roxy Blue are required listening. Even if you have no idea who Roxy Blue is, the stories on those episodes are just incredible.
That is one of the best things that's happened out of us doing this podcast. Chris and I were talking about that night. We've become like legit friends with him. Like on Thanksgiving and Christmas morning, the first happy Thanksgiving or happy Christmas text message I get is from Todd. And, awesome. You know, growing up where we did, Roxy Blue was huge. And, you know, and I think Chris said this, he goes, you know, in our eyes in 1992, there was no difference between Todd Poole and Janie Lane. They were both very huge to us, you know? And so the fact that it's because really of your podcast, because that you guys inspired me to start it. And then we met him at Rockin' Pot and hit it off. And we hear from him all the time. And he's just the nicest guy. And you just put a microphone in front of his face and it's gold.
Yeah. He's a great storyteller. If he should start a podcast, honestly. Okay. So thanks again for doing that. You want to have David just pick a playout song from the Crowes?
Sure. You know, and before we go, of course, we always got to let you know, check out Rock and Ron on YouTube for the Decibel Geek TV. Check out our Facebook page. If you want to hear some stupid Vinnie Vincent talk, join us for the Torpedo Dudes, because that's the only place you're getting any
Patreon.
Of that on Patreon. And I guess this has been awesome. Thanks, D-Hud.
Yeah, let's play us out with Sting Me off of Southern Harmony and the Musical Companion. And guys, I enjoyed it as always.
esta es la mejor mota.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.